astonished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR, the first Monday back. So Keane Ward is here with myself and Conan. Keane, welcome back.
Thanks very much, Roddy.
You had a Páirc Uíomh experience. You're on COCOM for Ayr for Tipperary Cork on Saturday night. So it's beautiful down there, let's be honest.
It is, yeah. I'd have a few gripes about the treatment of foreigners from people outside of Cork. You know, they had a security company involved who, you know, had disputes with you about where you had to park your car and all this sort of lark. But it's a lovely setup down there, it really is.
Lovely stadium. It's a mini Croke Park. Kind of,
it is. It's fantastic. Like from a spectator's perspective, you know, you don't have these big stupid pillars down the middle of the stand that block your view. Like, it's just fantastic. No matter where you are, terrace or in the stand, you have a brilliant view of all the action. So, a job well done, really, all round.
Yeah, so you probably missed Kildare-Dublin match because that was the one after it. You were probably stuck in traffic leaving Páirc Uíomh because that's the one gripe people have about it, right? We have to complain about something.
Am I allowed to admit that I didn't stay for the hurling and just got straight in the car?
Well, you are a football snob. We know that, right?
Well, listen, I had a league game at 11 a.m. Sunday morning and it's a 3.5 hour drive back. So
that's understandable. But one thing I wanted to mention about Kildare-Dublin, right? So Kildare-Dublin are back. Jim Gavin says they're only 2 weeks done. 2 weeks collectively. But there's no bloody way these lads were not training like maniacs on their own and doing the whole stuff that they have to do, themselves. 2 weeks, they went on holidays. From what I hear, when they went on holidays, the last 4 or 5 days was back training again. Do you know what I mean? So this is the culture that they developed. There's nothing wrong with that. But James Horan and Senan Connell were on the analysis and neither of them mentioned the fact that what were Kildare doing? Dublin were in cruise control. They weren't too bothered. Kildare were beating them. What did Kildare do? Got in a row with them. Pissed them right off. Yeah. This was just before half time. So Jim Gavin had said, didn't even have to say a word at half time. It's like, lads, are you really going to stand for that? So, like, I mean, what were Kildare thinking? Like, if you were down behind Dublin by 4 or 5 points, maybe start the row then and try and rattle them or whatever. But if you're 2 points up on Dublin and they're clearly sleepwalking through the game, don't poke the bear.
Yeah, it's a big thing. You'd see it a lot, where you maybe have the county man back playing a club league game or something like that. And he's just not that bothered, like, and then someone just goes over and starts annoying him, and he's just like, "Well, lads, you ever piss off now? If you're going to be at this crack now, I'm just going to make a fool of you." And it does happen. Yeah. Like, so you're absolutely right. I mean, just pointless sort of stuff. Get on with the game. Keep your nose clean. First day out, Dublin, as you say, really probably not that bothered, not that interested, taking a while to get into it. But yeah, if you just piss somebody off, it gives them that bit of fire, that bit of hunger that they possibly didn't have before it.
It does, and it's often happened to me in challenge games or even league games maybe with the club, where you're going out, you're not really up for it, you're just getting through the game, you want to enjoy it, and then your man starts to annoy you and then it gets personal. So then you're trying, like, you know what I mean, and then you made a big mistake there, mate. I was just out here to enjoy myself.
And you're saying you went on the roost him then, this fella?
Well, listen, and I didn't want to say that, Conan. I'm glad you might have mentioned it. But you understand the point I'm trying to make, that I thought Kildare were stupid. Now, it has to be said that the whole row started because Johnny Cooper went down. He got a push in the back by Niall Kelly and he went down holding his face. Now, we all know nobody likes to see that. James Horan made headlines in his analysis saying Johnny Cooper is sailing very close to the wind. He's at this all the time. Personally, I don't blame Johnny Cooper. I blame Niall Kelly for losing his discipline. There's loads of defenders like Johnny Cooper. I agree Johnny Cooper sails close to the wind, but I want my defender sailing close to the wind. Like, I mean, part of a forward's discipline is being able to deal with the Johnny Coopers of the world. The Johnny Coopers of the world have been around for donkey's years. They've been around since I started playing, and the whole thing is, don't fall into the trap. How many players down through the years, Les, do you know, don't react? They'll go down holding their feet. They're trying to get you sent off. Cooper did it. It looks terrible. But I don't know if we should single Johnny Cooper out for it, because, like, he's not alone in this.
No, well, whether he's alone or not, I mean, the whole thing of feigning injury, it is round a long time. It's never going to disappear. It does look a bit stupid.
It does look stupid,
but at the same time, if you're on the receiving end of that in Niall Kelly's scenario, you have to just laugh at him and get on with it. I mean, like, it's stupid to be dragged into it. You're kind of just bringing your team down and yourself away from your focus on your play, which is not what you want
to
do.
And that's what Cooper wants.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, there's a reason that people go out, and it's a bit of gamesmanship. They maybe, if a lad has taken a free, they'll talk to him. If off the ball, there might be a bit of pulling and dragging and verbals. But you have to rise above that. If you're a serious footballer, you don't get involved in that sort of stuff. I mean, it's very rare that you see top players reacting to that sort of stuff. They usually are able to manage their way through it because they're used to dealing with it. I mean, most top players are dealing with that since they're playing under 14 or under 16 football. So how you decide at senior inter-county that you're going to react and let your team down by getting involved in rubbish, you know. Some guys are good at this stuff, and if you're not good at it, you're better off staying away from it because it's only going to take away from your own performance.
Yeah, and Cooper's evolved into this pest. Like, he didn't start out like that. But over the course of the years since Jim Gavin took over is when he got his break. Every year he's been gradually, I think, getting more and more obnoxious and one of these players that you love to hate, Ryan McManaman-esque. And he didn't start out like
that. He's just properly aggressive.
Yeah.
Like, I think if you look at him in terms of his stature, he's a small, like, he's not that big of a guy and he's not that physically imposing. So he has to throw everything into it to, I suppose, put his weight around, you know, to get the fullness of his physicality. So maybe he has to, in his mind, just be that, maybe that, get into that zone of being a complete pest and being ultra aggressive to get the best out of himself. And look, fair play to him because he's been putting in brilliant performances. Now, he has put in some fairly suspect tackles over the years and he's kind of got away with some of the stuff, but, like, so what? Like, people get away with stuff all the time. I wouldn't be too hard on him. He's been one of Dublin's top defenders for the last few seasons.
As unsavoury as it is, though, to see him go around holding his face, there is a reward for it. Like, you know, like, Monaghan got a really harsh red card, Ryan Wiley going under the back of O'Shea. O'Shea didn't go down, he actually was pushed down. Tyrone, Darren McCurry was very harshly done as well for a red card.
McCurry was stupid though, wasn't he?
It was very stupid, that's what I mean. Yeah. But there is a reward there for the defender to go down and pretend like it's more than it is, because refs will react and give reds for... when it's not really a red, but it is, you're right, the same with Kelly, it's stupid to just react to that. Like, that's what
I think you're right, but I would say about the McCurry one, I would say that was a red. I'd say the Aidan O'Shea one was kind of a bang from behind. Aidan O'Shea had to go down. It's when Johnny Cooper went down and holding his back, I'd say fair enough. But when he goes down holding his face after being pushed in the back, I think that's just going to another level of soccer nonsense coming into the game, only, and we don't want that.
Well, look, the only way that you get rid of stuff like that is that if now on a Monday it's looked at on video footage and somebody says this is completely trying to deceive the referee, this is not what we want to see in the GAA, it's not what we want in our games, to give them a one match ban.
Yeah,
I mean, if you want to eradicate it, that's what you do.
And nip this in the bud.
Because
it's gone too far in the Premier League now, and this is where you could
stop
this.
Did Tiernan McCann get a ban a few years ago?
No.
He didn't get a ban.
He did originally, and then he got it rescinded because
there was no rule for it. Well, they need to bring in a rule for it and then start doing it.
Yeah, and Tiernan McCann's very embarrassed about doing that. And, like, I mean, you can do these things like on the spur of the moment and regret them later. Like, it's not like these lads are going out planning to do this. Tiernan McCann was on the show and he spoke really well about it. He says, look, that's
it. Listen, if you had hair like Tiernan McCann and somebody went messing with it now, you'd be unhappy.
You would be very, very pissed off.
Did you see Ronaldo last week when he was, he got a little bang in the head, you know?
That was a classic. I've never seen anything like that. But here's another good one. Well, we'll stick on Dublin because we're not going to focus on that in part two because you didn't see it, Keen. Is Jim Gavin said after the game, right? So Howard started the game and Basquel started the game. And do you know where they started the game? Do you know what the two of them did? They forewent. Can I say that? They forewent. They didn't go on the team holiday so they could play O'Byrne Cup and prove themselves to the manager. Like, isn't this unreal now, lads? They were entitled to a holiday. I think they... Well, congratulations, Jim Gavin, for the culture he has developed there. Because he says they were back for 2 weeks. That's only nonsense. These lads have been back training on their own. Now, whether they've been told to or whether they haven't, they have to do it. You land back into the Dublin camp and your numbers are off, you're gone. You're not getting picked. So through his ruthlessness, he has developed this squad into an absolute machine. Fellas that are so afraid to lose their positions that they're training like dogs when they're not even being asked to train. They're coming back in unbelievable shape from the winter and team holiday. They're training on a team holiday. They're passing up the opportunity to go on a holiday, all to make the Dublin team. Now, like, I mean, Jim Gavin deserves credit for developing that, because if you're not ruthless and you're entertaining fellas not putting it in, lads won't do that. So like, in a way, it's a little bit joyless, and I've said this before, but in another way, look at what he has now. He almost has a self-policing squad that are ready to do anything for him, and he's not even asking for it. So he can keep Joe Brawley happy by saying, well, we only train twice a week. So Joe won't be writing any independent.
As long as
Joe Brawley isn't lynching Dublin, well, like, listen, we've a lovely life-work balance, Joe. Relax. You know, we're okay here. Joe will be like, you wanna go like Dublin. And these poor fellas, these lads training 6-7 times a week on their own to keep their numbers good. You
sure,
know?
Did you not see his recent column? He's getting 2 text messages now of these Dublin lads. Like, they're the new like county player ran into in the shop. It's like a Dublin player text me during the week and said, great articles, you love the piece. But if you're Baskill and Howard, though, I can see why like they want to play, because they might not get picked in the league like to start off the year, so they do need to show their hand a little bit. There's just on that
team Jesus.
Yeah, but I suppose you have to look at it in the bigger picture. Like, if you really love your football, you're going to want to be playing under lights for Dublin and Croke Park on these Saturday evening games, particularly when you know you pretty much wallop every team you play. So I mean, nothing better particularly for a forward. I mean, they're getting some handy enough scores as well up front, because the rest of the team is so strong. They have an opportunity to look good and stake their claim for a place later on in the season, and they know that it's very hard to get in later on in the year unless you're a fringe player or a new player, and you're not absolutely flying at this time of the season. You have no hope of ever getting in.
Yeah.
So for their own career path with Dublin, if they're serious about it, that's just what they have to do. And as you say, for every other player, they have to keep themselves in decent shape, they have to be sharp. Like Bernard Brogan started the other night, like, he knows he has to perform well after the way the season ended.
It's Bernard
for him last
Brogan
year
in January, you know, like, I mean, you look at a lot of counties and there's some of their established lads stroll back
but
in March.
But Willie, it's not January, it's not like playing in the muck in Dr. Hyde Park. Like, this is Croke Park on the lights. Like, this is proper stuff. Like, it's the equivalent of a championship game. That you know they've big crowds at their matches. Like, playing for Dublin in league football is better than some teams playing championship football.
Yeah.
Other
and
counties,
that's the thing.
Like,
that's what, if you don't make the Dublin team, you're missing out on. There's the carrot.
You're missing everything.
You know,
yeah,
you're missing all this. You're missing just the, and you know you're going to be an All-Ireland final, semi-final, guaranteed. So you can't risk missing out on being on that 15. Like, I mean, and that's the motivation for all these lads. And that's how Jim Gavin, like Brian Cody, when they were in their pomp, and, you know, it's just the fear of losing your position, and they all say that.
But with the amount of training as well that's involved, you would want to play in every game. Like, if you were on the Dublin panel and you were like Bernard Brogan, say in his 30s, I mean, you want to be playing in the bloody matches. Like, what's the point in doing all the training if you're not getting in for games, or you're getting 10 minutes here or there, or maybe sitting on the bench and not getting a run? Like, I'd say he's looking at that going, if I'm going back and I'm committing to this thing, I want to play. Like, I don't care when the game is on, I just want to be in decent enough shape, enjoy my football, be fit and play games. Like, because they can have all the in-house matches they want. I'm sure they're as ferocious as they talk about, but at the end of the day, There's not the same buzz from them as there is from a proper competitive game.
Yeah, no, that's true enough. And another quick one I wanted to, before I move off this, was Daniel Flynn. He had a goal chance, and Owen Doyle was running on his right hand side, and both Sennan and the commentary, Sennan and then James Horan, all criticised Daniel Flynn for not passing it. But what about a sacrificial run? Like, I mean, is Doyle's job as a defender not to actually give the defender something to think about, to make a little bit more space? Doyle starts gesticulating like, you should have given it to me. Back off, Doyle, you're a defender. This lad's a full forward. You make that run, it's only to help him. It's not about you. I was on the other way of looking at this, as in, they actually use this is what Dublin would never have done. But I think any forward should actually be going through there. And if somebody makes a run on your right-hand side and you see him and it's a defender, you're like, I'm going to use this lad here to, like, if Daniel Flynn had scored that goal, it would have been a different kind of story around it. I didn't think Daniel Flynn did much wrong, only he's actually a bit of an erratic finisher. He scored a brilliant goal, but he missed a couple of ones by blasting him over the bar.
Well, was it any different to the Austin Gleeson goal last year, where he did it all himself?
Oh yeah,
everyone thought he was a great fella,
and he definitely had an option on the right hand side,
and
there,
and probably a better option than a wayward defender attacking them. You know, maybe Owen Doyle is a great finisher, but the reality is, in those situations, lads have to weigh it up very quickly and make a decision. And really, the instinct of all inside forwards when they get there is, there's a goal on here, and they have to be single-minded. I mean, if they have two things, if they're indecisive in these scenarios, they always fuck it up. Like, so they have to make a decision and stick to it and do it with conviction.
Yeah.
Now, Flynn is, as you say, a bit of an erratic finisher, but Bernard Brogan in that scenario, if you look to his right and he saw Michael Darren-McCauley, he mightn't give it to him.
He's not giving it to him.
Because Michael Darren-McCauley never gives it to him.
But Michael Darren-McCauley can't kick.
But yeah, exactly. Well, when he saw Dean Rock, he gave it to him. So that's the difference. Like, you weigh it up and you say, okay, this fella's 9 out of 10 finisher, this fella's a 3 out of 10 finisher. I'm actually better from here than he is from there.
Yeah.
And you have to make that decision in the blink of an eye. So some guys are good decision makers in those scenarios, some guys aren't.
Yeah.
It was a bit like the Clare one last year though, was it Malone that went through? And I was thinking, I agree with you about Austin Gleeson, because I love that he backed himself, and like that's what made it so good, that it was that sort of risk in it. But Gleeson scored. Like, and I was always looking at that Clare one last year thinking, if he passes, that's definitely a goal. If he doesn't pass, it's not definitely a goal. But no, you look at the replay of Flynn and he was 12 yards out in the end, so would he score that more times than not? Probably so. But
should have, yeah.
If he passed it, was it definitely a goal?
I don't think it... No, no,
and Doyle was at a bit of an angle.
Doyle was on his outside and you're beating Cluxton from that angle. I wouldn't think that.
Well,
it
also
was.
Sometimes when you get too close to the goalkeeper, it's actually a much harder finish. So if Doyle is coming at full tilt, by the time he takes possession and gets the ball to his boot, he's probably... Cluxton is on his foot.
Yeah. The point I was trying to make about this was Doyle's reaction. Doyle acted like this was the worst thing in the world. And I would have thought, from a defender's point of view, you understand that you're making that run to help the other fella, not for your own goal. So I would have thought, instead of saying what Flynn did was what was wrong with Kildare, I would say Doyle's reaction is what was wrong with Kildare.
Well, maybe in Kildare training, Flynn is only a 3 out of 10 finisher from here. So maybe Doyle is just going, come on, man, you always missed him from here when you laid him on.
Right, okay, well, listen, that's definitely a point that could be...
Donegal worked it really well though, the exact same scenario of Warren McNeely's going through, and it's really the 1-2 where he palmed it in then.
Yeah, but that was a definite palming. That's a kind of little bit different. Come here, read out some Niall Morgan comments from you lads. I thought they were brilliant. The Niall Morgan's a player who doesn't lack confidence. Like, he absolutely doesn't. He likes to have a bit of banter with the crowd. He likes to get involved in it. There's nothing wrong with that. So Galway beat Tyrone with Comer playing absolutely brilliantly, 1-2, outstanding stuff from Galway. So I wouldn't have said it was a huge surprise to have to go to Tuam in a bad day. But this is what Niall Morgan said on the local paper during the week. Now, you'd actually think Tyrone were going to play Leitrim and not Galway, right? So wait, Leitrim. So he says, going to Galway for the opening game is probably the hardest game that we could go to, because everyone's expecting us to win. And no matter what way you go, we're going to be the losers out of it. If we win, people say we're expected to win. And if we lose, people will say, what's going on here? Why are you losing to Galway? Really classic stuff. Like, this is Galway away. Like, this is a horrible fixture for a lot of teams. Like, I mean,
Galway favourites for the All-Ireland in 2020.
Another thing is that I wanted to mention that, because Galway maybe are taking that step up, lads, and maybe, you know, they're in Division 1 now, and you know, you always hear about teams saying, we want to get to Division 1, we want to test ourselves against the best teams. And again, that's obviously a poison chalice for the Roscommons, the Kildares probably, and the Meads, no disrespect. But for the Galways, I think Galway can maybe get something out of playing these teams all the time, because they're not far off it. And it's great for my prediction of an All-Ireland in 3 years. How many have left?
2 years.
Two more left, so this year and next year.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So this year's experience is going to really stand to them.
Yeah, it's great for him. I don't know. I just don't know how far Tyrone are down that road. I mean, I don't... You're going to laugh at me, but I don't like when people criticise how defensive they are and like they haven't changed. They lost to Dublin last year. Most people will lose to Dublin. Tyrone hammered everyone in Ulster. Got through the quarter final very easily. They're probably thinking, we'll just do the same and try and get a bit closer to Dublin, you know, for all I know.
It's the flexibility. It's the fact that they have only one way to play. And
yeah,
there's no
other
way. Now, I thought Tomás O'Shea probably... There was a hangover from the Gaeltacht Moy in his talking last night, because he absolutely lynched Tyrone for not having it. But, like, I do agree with Tomás, and we've said it on the show, we want to see something new from Tyrone. Now, we didn't see the whole game, so we don't know, but I was asking Philip Jordan on Twitter, because I hadn't seen Tyrone, and I meant to mention it last Thursday, and said, have you seen them playing this year? He said, I haven't seen them, but the talk is that they might be leaving two up there instead of one. But they did that at the start of the year last year. Do you remember they played Matty Donnelly up top for a little while? They experimented a little bit.
They did it the year before as well, but Michalski got injured for last year, so maybe they do want to do two, but they do have the options anyway without Michalski to play the two. Listen, I do like think it's more logical they have two up top at least, but I just think they were so good for periods last year. You know, I predicted they beat Dublin, so are they that far behind playing the way they are?
Well, maybe it just shows how important Colm Kavanagh is to them. Because like, he seems to be able to shore up the gaps, even when they're playing the system they play. It's really based around him being as good as he is. He's always the one being that second tackler or third tackler in and making these blocks. And
but he organises things well on the field.
He's unbelievably good at it. But Tyrone, unless they get their act together and start being a bit more adventurous in their style of play, they're in danger of becoming this season's, you know, Monaghan from last year. Like, Monaghan had a fantastic campaign the previous season and they were just flat the following season for whatever reason. I don't know whether it's trying to evolve their style. But there's a danger there that Tyrone won't, you know, won't be able to do what they did last year if they keep trying to do the same thing. Teams know exactly what's going to be expected.
Track their runners. Yeah. You track their runners. You're physically strong and fit against Tyrone. Track their runners, which I don't think teams in the north are, outside of maybe Donegal. And that was a freak result. I think if you track Tyrone's runner, they've no plan. They've no other way of playing.
And the reality is that this sort of style of football works on certain fields. It doesn't really work in Croke Park because you don't score enough to win big games. I mean, they only got 8 points the other day. Like, I know it's league football, but that's a very, very low tally. Like, that's the lowest tally, apart from Leitrim, in all four divisions. Yeah. Scored 5 points. Like,
I mean, it's not good enough. And it was a terrible day, apparently, up there in their defence. But I agree, I don't want to get too much into Tyrone, because we will talk about Tyrone when we get to see them.
No, they will improve and they'll be a lot better. But eight points is a worrying return first day out.
Ryan McManaman sent off against Wexford, which was a bit of a bad tempered
game. How did they catch him? So usually he gets away with this sort of stuff.
So there was a row, and it was just, of course, Ricey innocently. The row happened just in front of the dugout. So what's this man going to do? He's on his best behaviour, and what did they have to do? They had to start a row right in front of the dugout where Ricey was. So Ricey's off. So that was it. A really bad temper game. But it was Seamus Quigley with two more goals. And again, like, he's scoring goals in the McKenna Cup, and now he's banging them in during the league. So I don't know what your thoughts on this are, Keane, but I have my eye on Fermanagh. I just think with the management team and the few lads that they have back, I think that they're worth watching there in that Division 3.
Yeah, they definitely are. I think they're a good, solid, experienced team now at this stage, and they've got some quality back into the panel as well. The one thing about Fermanagh is that they play a style of football and a pattern of play that they're never going to hammer anybody. So, like, you could be looking at their scorelines even against maybe the weaker teams in the division, which I would expect Wexford to be one of them. And they didn't win that game by much, you know, 5 points at home. And you see Armagh putting up big tallies. But when Armagh play Fermanagh, it won't be that open game that, you know, Armagh had against Sligo. So, totally different style of play. Like, Fermanagh are the type of team that'll hammer a team by 4 points.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So
that's just their style of play and that attritional way that they play. And they have goal scorers up front. Like, that's the thing. They do have 3 to 4 quite dangerous forwards. And the rest of their team are all experienced, competent, hard-working footballers, and like, they've plenty of quality on the ball as well in terms of their decision making. They don't waste possession too often.
Yeah, it was interesting actually, just now that you mentioned Armagh, they ran up such a big score against a Sligo team inexperienced, but they played Ethan Rafferty and Mernon in the full forward line, and the story was that they were launching a lot of high balls in, so they don't know Jamie Clark or Stephen Campbell. So McGeaney's trying to think, what'll I do here, and just get a bloody in. I like McGeaney, I like the way he thinks, and I like the way he tries different things, and he's turned our mind to a real kicking, almost like a Mead of old is what is the
great
style he's
traditional
got.
Football, we love it.
Talking of Mead, Mead are looking today at being out of the game, coming back to 4 points up into injury time, and then throwing the bloody game away. So, like, I mean, this year has started again with a hard luck story for me. They've turned into a hard luck team. They'll lose out on points difference to get promoted into Division 1. We know the script is already written for me.
Yeah, well, look, it's not good, because usually every year there's just a little blip where they lose a game they should win. And that's a game that, having put themselves back into a position to be ahead going into injury time, they had an attack. Eamon Wallace, I think it was, dropped it into the goalkeeper's hands, and Roscommon go down the field. You know, they're the sort of things that in those games, you get that score, you're 4 points up, it's game over.
Yeah.
So they'd be obviously quite disappointed with that, but they'd have to take the positives from it. I mean, to go 5 points down and then get back and go three clear, I mean, you know, eight scores or 8 points on the trot, 1-5 I think they got. To go three ahead, or four ahead it was, actually.
They were four ahead, 2-12 to 1-11,
So positives from it. I think they've been trying to experiment, they're playing quite a defensive brand of football, which is a bit like they played at times in the league last year. And Division 2 is a bit like that, where it can be much more defensive than Division 1, but possibly Meath are best suited when they have to go after a game and go at a game. I mean, it can leave them exposed at the back, but possibly the players there are better suited to play in an attacking brand of football.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Quickly, lads, the new kick-out rule, just want to mention. I was tweeting yesterday, it's fantastic. We saw so many contested kick-outs. Like, I mean, in the televised games, they were all contested. And, like, it's such a small tweak, really. Like, I mean, it's only outside the 20 rather than going, but well, it's 20 metres, I suppose, you're saving off both ends of the field. It's 40 metres. So it is actually, like, I'm completely contradicting myself. It is a complete, like, if you're looking at goalies kicking it out over the end line, which we saw last year, then you're talking 20 metres. Loads of contested kickouts. The pitch obviously shortened enough to know that if you're going zonally, you've, you know, the area to hit the corner back, if you want to hit the corner back. We saw an example of Cluxton hitting James McCarthy bang on the 20 metre line, but that was the only place he could have done it because, you know, the lads were positioned. So we're seeing way more contested kickouts, way more longer kickouts. We have the mark in. Two beautiful little tweaks to the rules to help these matches as spectacles.
Yeah, it's a good rule. We spoke about it. We felt it would be a good change last year, so it's proven so far. I mean, I just have a preference anyway for seeing the ball being kicked out long. I don't particularly enjoy watching the game being played when it's being tapped to a corner back and it's slow build up the field. I'd rather see the physical exchanges and battling for breaking ball and the high fielding. That it's just a better spectacle for me than a lad tapping the ball on his toe in his own corner back position and yeah, everybody else retreating away from him, nobody putting him under any pressure. That's the game I would prefer to see being played, but at the end of the day, that's why the rule was brought in, I think.
Yeah, you're a traditionalist, Conan. You're more of a modern thinker, a hipster thinking. Like this tap to the corner
back. I thought the mark started all this out last year. I think it's a decent rule as well. It's working all right. But you did see Donegal retreating back, sort of afraid of the, I don't know if they were afraid of the mark or just afraid of getting caught. They had everybody back behind the 40. So Kerry
in the second half with the wind,
we'll talk about that.
They just retreated, but in the first half it wasn't really like that.
So it's just people like me now trying to figure out a way not to get caught by it.
Yeah, you're thinking of a doomsday scenario to make this rule not sound good. Michael Lester stood down from the Sunday game. We don't really have time to talk about that. Had a brilliant career, turned 65. Prefer him on the hurling show than on the football show because he just seems to let lads say stuff without ever challenging them. I don't think that's his style, so I think maybe he might have reached the end anyways, but he is 65 and I think he's obliged to retire. So it'll be interesting to see who's going to get that job. You'd imagine RT's financial issues, that it's going to be an internal appointment. So lads, nobody get excited in this room. Alright, we'll be back and have a look at a couple of matches.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens yeah, and it does happen, yeah. But I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show, it doesn't look great. Yeah, there was maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible, but unlucky to lose. Like, let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50%
pain, and 100% reason to remember the name. We'll start with Kerry Donegal, lads, because this was an absolute classic. I completely stayed away from Twitter. I didn't want to know the result, and I really enjoyed the deferred game. I genuinely find when you know the result, it feels like work. When you don't know the result, it's, you know, it might be work, but it's also really enjoyable. This was fantastic. This was like just a game you just didn't know which way it was going. Like, when Donegal scored that third goal, I was like, what the hell? But, like, I mean, I saw Fitzmaurice saying after the game, there's no doubt we were open and conceded goals. You're bloody right you were open and conceding goals. When are Kerry going to fix this issue?
Yeah, well, they were caught quite badly for the goals from Donegal kickouts.
Kickouts. And Eamon said that, and I was saying that myself yesterday. This is kamikaze stuff. Why are they pushing so many men up and get... All it was like three scores. McBrearty's score, McNeilish's goal, and there was another one. And
O'Connor's
all it was...
Goal.
All it, O'Connor's yeah, goal. Yeah. All it was winning a kickout or flicking a kickout on.
Yeah.
So their whole half-back line has been sucked in under that. Like, that's an easy fix. It's such an easy fix.
Yeah, well, I don't mind the fact that they push up, but, I mean, the ball is in the air a long time. I mean, really what happens, if the ball is not landing in your zone and you're not going in for a breaking ball, you get back and plug the gap down the centre of your own defence.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a brilliant tactic from Donegal's perspective, and it will continue to work, because if Donegal are ahead in a game and a team are chasing, they can't afford to let them just tap the ball out to the wing.
But Keane did an extra man for most of the game. You don't even have to
it's a very strange one. Like, you can see that Kerry were trying to play on the front foot, in terms of they wanted to contest kickouts. They didn't want to concede possession, as you would expect, especially when you're a man up. But quite an inexperienced team, maybe just lost a run themselves a little bit, in terms of, I would expect my centre back there to just hold that zone in behind, because there was a number of them broke in behind the midfield, which is an obvious one where a centre half back should just be coming in and picking that up. Now, there's no point in having your centre half back standing back on his own 21 yard line, you know, because he's no addition to
you.
But he should be in that zone. Yeah. Beyond midfield, where he picks up the break, or certainly if there's runners flooding that zone, that he's there to slow them up or block them off to allow cover defenders back.
Yeah, but like, I mean, what are Kerry doing wrong? And I genuinely think it's so naive. Like, I mean, against Mayo last year, they were all over the place, they were destroyed, and then they played the sweeper in the second game and they got criticised for that. But like, I mean, you see how Dublin do it. They just use their centre half back so intelligently. So Keane O'Sullivan is up man and up for a while, but then he's dropping off and he's playing the game. He's over back, he's constantly watching that this kind of thing doesn't happen. And why is Kerry's centre back not being coached to now? I know it's a, like,
I just think the difference is that their man-to-man markers aren't as good.
Yeah,
that's the big difference. Like, if your cornerback is tight enough on his man,
but the break, if you win a kick out against Dublin, you're not straight through on goals there on the full forward line. Like, I mean, there has to be someone being smart enough to go, James McCarthy, go, okay, he's gone back a little bit around the other side, I'm going to stay where I am. I'm not following him into a place where I don't think that kickout's going. Because, like, I mean, midfielders read kickouts all the time, the way the goalkeeper's shaping up. There's an opportunity to go, I'm letting him off here and I'm getting back. You can't have a situation where you're winning a kickout and you're straight through on your full forward line.
Yeah.
It's a good... It happened so many times yesterday to go, Jesus Christ, Kerry. Like, I know this is an inexperienced team, but, like, I mean, an inexperienced team...
Yeah, but they're all playing football since they're...
Yes, but an inexperienced team, Keane, if you've got a system of play and a way of playing that, if you've got a new centre-back coming in place of your old centre-back, they're not playing centre-back the way they want to play. They should be playing the way the team wants to play. You know what I mean? And that message should go out there, that this isn't the way you want to play. This is the way we do it. So, like, if Keane O'Sullivan for Dublin isn't playing there, and you have Johnny Cooper played the Keane O'Sullivan role in centre. You know what I mean? Or a variation of that.
Yeah.
I don't think that that you have different players means, oh, well, just because you have different players, will you all go out and play whatever way you want?
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's very difficult to tell, but it looked to me like Kerry were sending their team out to just play football. It was such a... It was an unrecognisable Kerry team. And maybe in that, again, it's guesswork really, but you're thinking maybe Fitzmaurice is looking at that saying, I've so many new guys there, let's simplify the job for them. Let's put them on your man to man, win your battle, and, you know, we can burden them with tactical stuff later down the line as we're developing the team. But this is first day out debuts for a lot of players there. Let's not overcomplicate things. Let's keep a nice, simple message to young players. You're playing cornerback, mark your man. You're playing centre half back, mark your man. You're playing wing back, mark your man. And you could see that Paul Murphy was the one who was trying to sweep and adjust things and read things, and he's one of their more experienced players, and he had a really good game.
Yeah.
Look, again, that's what I suspect may have happened, because if you're given too many messages and trying to overcomplicate things for players, it doesn't work, particularly when they're new into a team or into a system. It needs to be developed over time, and unless Kerry are training since last September, which probably maybe some of them are, it's very difficult to implement that.
Yeah, there's a few of the negatives. Go on, Kyle.
You know, a good defender though should be able to sniff that danger, right, no matter what age he is, and be able to firefight. Like, the third goal, I can sort of understand. Big massive catch by McFadden, hoof ball right over the top, bad defending, alright, but McBrearty's catch, and then he's just got 16 steps there on him, no one there to come over and nail him. He just caught the ball over his man's head and no one's just thinking, I can just come and
I was junior level stuff. You wouldn't see it at junior level really, to be able to catch a ball like that,
like, and watching on TV, you're just expecting someone to come in off the screen and he just keeps going, like, and puts it over. So we, it's almost like a bit like Arsenal. It looked like, you know, they were so good going forward, but just flaky at the back. And this whole "it's not my man, not my problem" attitude, like, that needs to stop. Because Declan Bonner said afterwards about Dublin and Mayo and their man-to-man sort of abilities, and that's the difference, and they're the benchmark. And I thought, that's what Kerry need to be looking at as well, the man-to-man, being able to go and just stay with your man the whole time.
Yeah, but that's the danger of going staying with your man the whole time. And if that's the message, well then, I have my man.
Yeah,
I'm grand. And that attitude has gone out of Intercounty now, where they're completely selfless, and it's like, that's not my man. My man's doing nothing, but I'm getting over on him. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I mean, there has to be that. And I thought, for McBrearty's point, I looked in the background because I saw the clip online there, just to actually watch it. Crowley had dropped off, but he was covering the middle. And he never came across really to close off McBrearty at all. Like, that's where the danger was, but he didn't come across. So maybe there's a bit of inexperience from his point of view. Another issue with Kerry, before we go on to the positives, was, like, I didn't like Shane Enright marking McBrearty. Shane Enright is not at the level that he can mark the top level players. He's too small. Physically, he's under pressure with high diagonal balls. He's been proved that this is a struggle for him. Shane Enright is still a really good player. He's your number two cornerback. They need to find a number one. I was disappointed Jason Foley followed his man all over the field. We didn't see anything of Jason Foley as the full back. I was reading a thing last year where someone said Jason Foley's the fastest man on the Kerry team. I'd love to have seen him racing McBrearty out, getting a fist in and going, now Kerry have someone that could maybe, you know, match Andy Moran or match somebody, because he is a decent sized fella. But he spent the whole game running around midfield, not sure who he was covering, so he didn't play a full back at all. That was kind of disappointing, leaving their full back line completely open like Mayo the first day. Very disappointing, considering, like, what are Kerry trying to work on? They're, you know, Shanahan looked a good player, another small player. Who's Kerry's Johnny Coopers? Who's Kerry's physical pups? Who's their, like, I mean, I don't see anything from them. I know it's early, but they're a lovely team, a lovely footballing team, and Shanahan's another lovely player, cut in and has left over the bar. Murphy, a beautiful little player, he has a bit of bite in him, but I didn't see anything from defence that is going to make me think Kerry can beat Mayo or beat Dublin. It, again, very, very early, and I'm being overcritical. Let's move on to the positives. Sean O'Shea, Clifford. I thought Clifford was brilliant. I thought he was very nervous, but Jesus, he's 18 and the whole country was literally watching him yesterday. So imagine the nerves, that poor fella. But I thought he was brilliant. I thought he showed maturity laying off balls. I thought he was smart. What he's absolutely brilliant at, and we move on to Sean O'Shea in a minute, is what Clifford does. He comes looking for a short hand pass and then doubles back the other way. How many times did you see the hand pass and he's gone straight in? But that's clearly, like, that happened two or three times to make it look like this is kind of a mistake, you know, just by chance that he's looking for it, and then he's completely doubling back.
Yeah, look, people are expecting an awful lot from him, and it was just amazing. The first ball that was played down the wing to him, you could just hear the crowd, this buzz from the crowd.
Never heard anything like this, lads.
No, incredible stuff. And in fairness, there's a lot of expectation on him. It was a solid enough game. He made a couple of mistakes, did a couple of good things, but I mean, he's a kid, like, kid playing at a completely new level in difficult underfoot conditions,
and
every time he gets it, he's going to be swarmed. I mean, there was one time he was probably going to go through for a goal and he was just very cynically just pulled back and a handy tap over free. So look, there's no doubt about it, he's shown what an exceptional talent he is, and a few games developing at this level, and maybe a bit more support around him and drier ground, and we'll see much more from him.
But those scores will come. You don't rack up the scores, like, he's a little accurate, but what he showed me yesterday is that he's an all round kind of player, you know. He's not just a finisher, because I wouldn't worry about that finishing. I'd say the nerves and all that kind of thing building up, they'll be gone after two or three games, but the all round smartness, the game intelligence, I didn't realise he was at that level maybe of being as clever a player as he is.
And the decision making, like, he was through for goal, but he dropped the ball, and you can just see in his eyes, he's looking at everything around him and scanning it, and then just pops it off to O'Brien, who gets the handy ago, but like Keane, it's funny you say 18-year-old. Like it's easy to forget. Like he was such a marked man by Donegal as well. Like, and Paddy McBurtie hit him with a big shoulder at one stage. Then there's other boys coming on the back of him every time he lost the ball or whatever, you know, mouthing off to him. This is an 18-year-old. Like, yeah, he's getting that treatment as if he's the best player in Ireland already.
Yeah. Sean O'Shea, though. Now, I know Sean O'Shea won't mark Leo McLoone every day of the week and give him the complete freedom. Leo McLoone maybe played that role where I'll let him on. He's only young. But he got his comeuppance inside the first 20 minutes, like three lovely scores, and then showed bottle. Sean O'Shea didn't play like a young fella yesterday. He's the real deal now. Him and Clifford are the real deal. They'll play championship this year. I know we talked up Jack Savage this time last year, and he looked like an industrious, clever player. But this Sean O'Shea is a different ball game now. This is a big man.
Yeah, he's a bit more physicality.
Big physicality, a powerful man. Clifford and Sean O'Shea, on the evidence of yesterday, are walking onto this Kerry team and are going to be much stronger for it. Another quick one is that I'd like to see them use Geaney in the air a little bit more. They've a lovely balance that forward line now. Like, I mean, you look at maybe James O'Donoghue will come in instead of Barry John Keane, so you'll have that pace, you'll have Clifford being double marked. Geaney the odd diagonal ball, which he's well capable of winning, I'd like to see.
Like, if you have Clifford and Geaney in a two-man full forward line, and you know, quality ball going in terms of even a high diagonal ball to both of those men, Geaney's very good over his head, Clifford is obviously a big man, they're seriously, seriously lethal threat up front. And yeah, like that, you have Barry John Keane has always shown very well. Every time he plays, he seems to do well. And James O'Donoghue maybe buzzing out in front of those as the third man in there, maybe.
And loads of pace on the two wings with Burns and Stephen O'Brien. Like, I mean,
Burns was good. I thought Burns was showed
a flyer,
quite well. Yeah,
yeah, he's a little flyer.
He's a decent foot passer. The ball was given in some good ball there. So he's another decent prospect for Kerry.
Definitely, and like, I mean, he's got huge amount of pace. And like, if you're looking down the line at playing against Dublin, you know, this is what you want. You want Stephen O'Brien and Burns, who are, you know, not only being able to track McCarthy and McCaffrey and these fellas, but also able to give them something to think about the other way around. So I see Burns, I would see Burns featuring in the championship, because I think those wing forwards are up for grabs in Kerry big time. Donegal Walsh might not have a full game in him. Stephen O'Brien's in and out. I can see Burns getting on that team.
Yeah, well, look, at the way the game has gone anyway, you need a panel of probably 25, particularly when you see the format of the championship later on.
Yeah.
With the Super 8 scenarios, where teams are going to have games in quick succession and high level games, so they will need a panel of 25, and Kerry have an unbelievable amount of talent, and it's really for Fitzmaurice about balancing that. And in fact, all of the injuries that they have and players out at the minute is actually going to help Kerry, I think, this season, because they're going to he has to play all these young guys, which he may have been holding in reserve if he had everyone available to him, but now he has no option but to play them, and it's a good thing.
He should stick with them.
Yeah,
like, they've got their 2 points on the board now, should stick with that. That team should play the next day. He should keep these lads together now.
Well, he's probably looking to get the same scenario as Dublin, where, I mean, if you're showing up well in training and you're playing well, you get your jersey.
Mm. Yeah.
And no matter how many All-Ireland medals you have, or how good you were last year or 2 years previous, if you're not doing it on the training pitch and you're not showing up well, you're not in good shape, you're not going to play. And Kerry have the depth of talent on the back of their minor success that Fitzmaurice can do that. Like, there's obviously incredible talent in Kerry, so he now has the position where he has to harness that and create that same culture, which I'm sure the Kerry boys they already have this culture. I mean, look, it's just ingrained in them, but now they have the depth of talent that they maybe didn't have in previous seasons.
Yeah, definitely. And Fitzmaurice is ruthless too. Like, I mean, we only have to ask Mark O'Shea and a couple of these fellas that, like, I mean, he's no problem being absolutely ruthless.
Yeah, when they get Jack Barry and David Moran back as well, the front eight's going to be unreal, probably.
Yeah.
One of the best in the country, but it's just that back 6-7.
It's going to snooker them. It's going to snooker them.
Paul Murphy, you're right, is real tiger, like, back there. He does, like, for a small man, he's got real steel about him, like, but the other five now need to sort of step up, and you're right, that will catch them.
Yeah, they need a centre half back. They need a smart, intelligent centre half back that knows when to go and knows when to drop off and knows how to play that position. They don't have a specialist centre back, and they haven't had one for a long time. Like, I mean, Crowley plays there, Killian Young plays there, Aidan O'Matney played
Tyke
there, plays there. They don't have a fella that goes, this is my position, I have it down. Because I've said this 101 times, I've played wing back for most of my underage career, and the odd time from Portlaoise, if we'd be stuck, they'd put me centre back, and I was like a fish out of water. It's a completely different ball game. I didn't know whether to go into midfield after my man, whether to hold. Whenever I held, my man got on the ball and I was being shouted at, and then I was going after him. I was like, how do these lads do this? Yeah, how can they actually...
There's an awful lot of decision making for a centre-half.
Huge decision making.
Yeah, it's a really, really important position. And sometimes you can be doing the right thing for the team in terms of locking down that centre zone, but it means that your man does get on a handy ball and maybe kicks a point or is involved in an attack to create an overlap and get a score. But
yeah,
I suppose from a centre-half back's perspective, it's deciding when you press up tight on your man and nullify the attack, or when you drop off because you can see dangerous runners getting in behind, and you have to spot that danger area early, as Conan was talking about. Good defenders see the danger, so they see, okay, there's a goal opportunity here if this play develops, and they have to maybe drop off their man, and they're relying then on, you know, half forward line midfielders getting back into that zone to block up where their man is.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, there's a lot of that. If you're centre back, yeah, you are relying on your teammates around you to, like, you're effectively covering your full back line, so you're relying on somebody then to help you out.
And the reason I'm critical of this is that in the modern game, the half forward lines go so deep now, it's making that decision a lot easier. They go into positions where it's not a danger, so you can say, I'm gone. So, like, there's no excuse for Crowley here yesterday, leaving that so open, when a lot of the time his man has gone so far that he's not even up for, like, he's not even a threat. So, like, I mean, I don't think there's any excuse. On Donegal, lads, I thought they were really good. I thought they played well. You know, a little bit more attacking. I think the second half is probably not a good judge because they were trying to hold on to a lead and they were a man down. But in the first half, while Mullins was on the team, and they had a bit of a breeze, but, like, there was always two men inside, and when the two men inside won at McBrearty or Brennan, they had support runners with them. So we definitely saw there was a lot more kicking, it was a lot more obvious that this, they want to get that ball into these two fellas. Brennan's lively, McBrearty's brilliant. McBrearty's going to benefit massively from these new tactics because he's an old school type of forward that wants to get out in front, wants to lay it off, wants to kick points. That defensive style didn't suit him at all. But, you know, Donegal definitely interesting from that point of view.
And Oran McNeely doesn't look like a man who's been out for a year.
What a brilliant player that fella is. Like, he's the type of player that pisses me off. He probably doesn't even have to train that hard. He's just a naturally gifted, you know, he's one of these fellas that it just comes easy to him. And the fact that he can fetch the way he fetched, mm-hmm, like, I mean, it's just effortless to him. It's effortless.
I don't think I appreciated how fast and easy he could move across the ground as well in January as well. Like, and you're right, for such a fast, sort of speedy, tricky fella, he can catch the ball as good as anyone.
Yeah, I mean, the one, look, he made a few spectacular catches, but there was one in the Kerry full back line where he caught this punted free, I think, from McBrearty that went up into the clouds, and he caught it and was pulled straight to the ground for a handy tap over. But it was just an unbelievable catch, surrounded by two or three men under serious pressure.
I remember it, yeah.
And it was dropping like a stone from the sky.
It wasn't
really
an easy
difficult
catch,
ball
no.
to take. So, look, he had a really good game, and he's massive addition back for Donegal. You know, he was outstanding, and look, Donegal will benefit. Like, McBrearty again looked very good yesterday. It was very disappointing for Mullins to get himself sent off so stupidly in the first half, because it really changed the game from Donegal's perspective. You know, they were in a decent enough place, they were working their way into the game, and it forced them to play a completely different way, and they adapted to it magnificently.
It
well, Donegal, like, I mean, to be a man down away to Kerry in the first round of the league.
Well, who is Kerry's extra man? This is none of us. We've all watched the game, and I made a point in the second half going, I'm going to need to know who the extra man was. I couldn't identify him. I actually could not identify, because usually the extra man will actually plonk themselves back in front of a full back line. We didn't see that. So it actually, unless I have no idea who it was.
Like, he'll plonk himself in front of the full back line. He'll be the one taking the ball out with nobody marking him. It should be very easy to spot him, and it wasn't. I have no idea who he was either.
Bloody hell, the modern game, you just don't know who the extra man is. But, like, if you have Donegal, like, I always look up front, you've McBrearty and Murphy, who I'd say will play Murphy inside, because Bonner has been talking about giving it in long a little bit more, and then you've McNeilish, and you've like Kieran Thompson or someone on the half forward. You've a dangerous foursome there, you know, that can kick long range scores.
Stephen McBrearty looked
pretty slow, but is very, very accurate. But they have options there as well, you know. And Mullins will be better in midfield.
I thought Hugh McFadden had a good game.
Hugh McFadden was really good yesterday, you know.
He's a mountain of a man, really, isn't he?
He's not skipping reps in the gym.
That was the best I've seen him play, actually, because I thought there was a bit of an also-ran about him, but he was really good yesterday.
He's a very young player, though, isn't he?
Well, not that young. He's not that young, no. I don't think he's that young.
Inexperienced, we'll say.
Maybe. But then you've got Ryan McHugh then, you know, obviously breaking from deep, and the Caelan Ward, he had his hands full with Clifford at the start yesterday. Donegal are going grand. They're going grand. There's nothing. I don't think there's any problem with them.
Yeah, the red card again, really stupid. Deserve a red card, but it's like give O'Sullivan a yellow card for pulling the jersey. Like, you know, the linesman saw that kick. He obviously saw what happened beforehand, and that's how forwards usually get yellow cards, when they react to somebody pulling them.
Yeah, but it's just so stupid.
Very stupid.
I mean,
I know.
We spoke about it earlier. I mean, if you're reacting to that sort of nonsense, you have no business playing any football, never mind county football, at that level.
But like, it's just you're inconsistency to give him a yellow at least as well for pulling his jersey.
Well,
trying to provoke
that won't endear him to his new teammates anyway. That's
no,
for sure.
Again, I mean, look, this is club level stuff at intercounty level. Mullins should know better. Don't lose your head at intercounty level. The club players don't make it to intercounty level because they react to situations like that. And at intercounty level, kicking like that, if he was a teammate of mine, being like, cop yourself on, you let us down. Like, it was petulant, and there's no place for that intercounty level. That's the reality of what he did. There's certain things that you can forgive, but that's not one of them. That's a club level, you know, reaction to some innocuous provocation.
I'm not forgiving him. I just want the refs to come down on these boys here. Like, this is the people who are getting the forwards yellow cards.
You're victim blaming now, Conan. That's what you're doing.
You're just consistency.
Right, lads. Cork Tipperary. This is the one you were at. Quickly, we don't want to go too much at it. Stephen O'Brien in midfield didn't do too well. Was a bit rusty. Funnily enough, he's not great in the air. Stephen O'Brien. I'd say Stephen O'Brien was midfield all his life because he was just a big monster of a man. He's not like a fetcher in the Darrow O'Shea mould. Like, he was dominated in the air from what I could see. Stephen O'Brien's qualities at midfield is that he's a big, powerful runner, and he'll break forward, which, you know, he is really good at.
Yeah, well, I'd say, look, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt first day out. He hasn't played at that level in a couple of seasons, and possibly judgment on kickouts and stuff like that was a bit off. I don't know how much football he has played in the last couple of seasons with colleges or that. Possibly he looked like a guy who hadn't played a massive amount of football, but he kept trying. You know, his effort levels were good, even though he looked like he was out on his feet on a few occasions. But he made a crucial interception off his own goal line in the second half, which was you know, that was probably the difference for Tipperary between winning and losing, because that was what it came down to, was those key opportunities. Tipperary finished two goals absolutely brilliantly well. I mean, they were kind of Quinlevin's one was a real chance, but McGrath's one was a bit of a half half chance on his weaker foot out from goal. Most guys would have clipped it over the bar. And then Cork miss a penalty and have a couple of one ball cleared off the line, and another one where I think Sherlock was looking at the goalpost and just didn't go for a full blast. So very tight game, very entertaining game actually, and high scoring.
Very entertaining
first
game,
day out, two teams that were looking to go at the game for as much of it as they could.
Kern said that in fairness to Cork, they're missing the Nemo guys again. We talked about this Thursday, bloody Cork intercounty manager being punished because their clubs win the, like, isn't it terrible that Cork might not get back into Division 1 because of the structure is punishing them for a club in the county doing well. Like, it's just so wrong. It's so wrong that they're, like, they probably have four or five Nemo lads there that would be starting. Cork, though, like, I mean, it's the same old Cork. Like, it looked to me, I didn't see anything that made me think this is a new Cork under a new manager. Like, it's the same. Mark Collins, obviously very good full forward. Like, I mean, he's lethal in there. Him and Colm O'Neill, you could build a team around there. But it's a lot of just all right players rather than top, you know, players. Like, I mean,
But I think they did five or six debutants as well. So, I mean, like, you'd have to give them a little bit of time to bed themselves in, and Division 2 is probably the right place for them to do that at the minute.
They've no business going back up to Division 1.
Well, I don't think that they will, particularly missing the Nemo guys I'd say Shlock Neil will probably beat them, so they're not going to be missing them for too long, but it's not going to be enough to get them the points or to give them that boost. So he has to try out players. He tried out two new cornerbacks who found the going tough but did a lot of good things as well. Overall, I'd say Cork couldn't be too disheartened with the game. I mean, they did pretty well. They were very competitive with Tip throughout, and Tip are a team that are on an upward curve and are very experienced at this point in time. So for Cork to run them as tight as they did, and, you know, to be in a situation where they could have won the game, I think was pretty decent from Cork's perspective. I think if their expectations were any higher than that, they have their head in the clouds.
Porter at 11, You like that, or do you lose his kind of Ryan McHugh runs from the half back line, and Maguire likes to break forward? They lose the running game by playing him
there. I would have preferred to see Powder a bit deeper, but he probably will be when the likes of Luke Connolly and Kerrigan come back into the team, into the forwards. And, you know, Colm O'Neill not starting the game, interesting one as well, because look, while he mightn't be as dynamic as some of the other guys, he knows where the posts are, and if you have him in there with a bit of space in front of him, he's generally pretty tidy on the finishing.
Yeah, okay, one quick one. Conor Sweeney at 11. I know he does, they rotate a little bit.
He pretty much played most of the game inside with McGrath, and was Quinlivan that was the one that was coming
around
in and out, and that actually suited him because he came onto some of the ball really well, like at good angles, at pace, and drew frees, and was able to get Tipperary up the pitch and contest kickouts as well when they needed them to, because they struggled a little bit around the middle at times. But yeah, if they get Quinlivan and Sweeney, two men inside, and they get decent ball into them, like the two boys inside are excellent.
Yeah, they're an unreal team to watch, Tipperary, aren't they? They're always involved in such exciting games, whether it be Armagh last year, Cavan that came back last year, then the year before when they got to the semi-final, they're in all sorts of great games.
They play an open brand of football.
They replay a lovely open brand of football, but then again, like, I mean, they are again a little bit naive at the back, but I mean, this is the whole thing. Guardiola and Wenger teams are criticised for being bad at the back. If you commit to attack, you're not going to be as good at the back. Now, Dublin obviously have the balance perfect on their team, and that's why they're winning all the All-Irelands that they are. But I mean, like, if you're an attack-minded manager, you're not going to be brilliant at the back. And maybe that's what Fitzmaurice will tell us. Look, we're interested in trying to attack
We're interested in trying to win games as opposed to not lose them.
Yeah,
you know, and there is a balance to be struck with your defensive shape and organisation when you're out of possession, but that will develop. Like, the top teams are usually pretty good at that later on in the campaign. And look, if you don't have a centre back as good as Keane O'Sullivan is, or some of the backup Dublin players are, well then there's not a lot you can do about it if you're playing the best centre back at your, you know, available to for selection for you. So I won't be critical of managers trying to go out and win games.
I'm interested that Woolley has Guardiola and Wenger in the same stratosphere. That's a very interesting one.
We'll have to edit that out.
Philosophies.
Quinlivan's goal, though, that's the hardest finish, I think, in football.
It is.
Like, coming across.
Very hard to control
inside
that.
Instep, like, just under the top right corner. Unbelievable. And even just to go for it in a game like that is crazy, but he just nailed it. Like, he could do it anything.
And the difference between that and McGrath, the game was over when McGrath got his. You'd say, okay, McGrath went for that, but, like, I mean, there was no pressure on that. There was huge pressure on Quinlivan at that time, and he'd already missed one in the first half where he went a bit too far right. I don't know why he didn't jink in the other way that time. He was in a one-on-one, but to do that, what Quinlivan did, it was unbelievable. He's just a fantastic player, Quinlivan.
Yeah, he's top class.
Right, okay, we've just talked about Quinlivan now, so we've performance of the weekend next, and we'll see, is he in it?
When your legs don't work like they used to before.
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning, and I had the podcast on from Newbridge the other night, and that helps the journey, to be honest, if I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs. Depends on mood I'm in. Ed's good for if you're in a sloppy mood, Ed's good to sing along to, and then if you're in a GA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on.
Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70.
Alright, performance of the weekend, and there's loads of nominations this week, lads. Obviously we have four divisions and great performances. Obviously haven't seen all these performances, but from reading the match reports, Brendan Murphy was outstanding for Carlo against London. No surprises there. He's the heartbeat of the whole team. I think two players should get a shout out is Robbie Smith and Sean McCormack from Longford. They're two great players, and, you know, at that Division 3 level, they scored 1-12 between them. Smith got 8, 4 from play, and Sean McCormack got 1-4, and they destroyed Offaly, and that was a surprise in O'Connor Park, because they're two evenly matched teams. So, you know, outstanding stuff, and we want to talk to a couple of them over the course of the league. Damien Comer, new Galway captain, huge fan of Damien Comer on the show here. Tried to get him on the show today, but he was away with some teams or something, so he couldn't take the call. Outstanding 1-2 against Tyrone is no mean feat in the conditions, and obviously Tyrone being the most boring defensive team in the whole country now, according to Tyrone. People are starting to turn against Tyrone's system now, instead of, like, I mean, Tomás O'Shea was right what he said. I do think he was motivated by what happened with Moy, but there was nothing wrong with what he said. I didn't think Audrey McNeilish, we talked about him, Paddy McBrearty, we briefly talked about him. Yeah, I think I was the only one who talked about Sean O'Shea, lads, because I didn't get a chance to ask the two of you, because sometimes I maybe talk a little bit too much.
He was very good.
What did you think? What are we dealing with here? Are we dealing with the top notch?
It reminds me of those, like, centre forwards that I would hear stories about from the old days. Like, you know, never really, I'd see some clips of them, but these big, powerful lads who could run over the top of you, they could pass it, they could kick. He was taking a freeze as well, so he obviously has a bit of a nerve about him.
Yeah, ahead of Geaney.
Yeah, and I think you said it, like, he is the real deal. Like, he's definitely going to start in the championship, and I think he's going to be a big player for them. Like, he's a proper footballer.
Yeah.
Well, I think you sometimes just have to look, and on Twitter you had the likes of Aidan O'Mahony and Tomás O'Shea saying, you know, Sean O'Shea has arrived and all this sort of stuff. They wouldn't be putting those comments up there if this was a player that they didn't already highly rate before he even started playing.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They obviously have been watching this guy. They know what he's capable of. And I thought he was decent against Donegal. He did some good things, some bad things. He was a bit erratic with his finishing at times. His frees were... He got the big ones. In the first half, he scuffed one off the ground and was lucky enough it came back to him, and he drove through and finished well. So not the perfect performance.
Yeah.
But again, from a very young player, looked very accomplished and looked comfortable at that level. And again, for a young player to take on the responsibility of the free taking, particularly near the end of a game, when it was a couple of pressure kicks that he needed, sometimes in those scenarios you see then, you know, the more experienced guy like Geaney maybe would pull rank and say, okay, you've taken the ones with no pressure throughout the game, but this is a big free now, so I'm going to take this one. But Sean O'Shea took it, nailed it, and what more can you say? He's got nerve and he's got quality.
That's the thing, and we're going to talk about that in the hurling show today as well, that Duggan from Clare was taking the frees and he missed two, like, 70 yard ones, and he was taken off them. You know what I mean? Like, Sean O'Shea was stuck with, and that shows the level he's taught at. I thought the ones against the wind, now he did obviously scuff the one off the ground, but he came back well with the wind. Against the wind is difficult. And I always think back to my first ever league game with Laois. I was shitting it. Like, this was such a daunting experience to think that you would be, like, he took that game by the scruff of the neck in the first half, scoring those 3 points. When, like, I didn't take my debut by the scruff of the neck. I was just glad to get through it, and my head was down. And this wasn't a televised game with a lot of the country talking about me being the next big thing, because Sean O'Shea is throwing it. While he's not at Clifford's level, Sean O'Shea is the next one that rolls off your tongue, that he's the like, to score 3 from play and 3 really good points from play and be like a dominating force in your first ever game on TV in front of 11,000 people from Kerry, and like I said, on the telly, he didn't just get through that game. He was a talking point out of that game, and that's his debut. Think of what this lad's going to be when he's 21, 22, 23, experience behind him. We're looking at a dominating centre forward in the making here. We're looking at, and we're looking at Clifford in the corner. We're looking at two fellas here who'll be on the same wavelength, who are the same age, who'll have cockiness, and who are big men. Like, we're seeing two superstars in the making. I'm genuinely, you know, and you see the Kieran Kilkenny, Jack McCaffrey, they were superstars in the making. I remember their first debut season. Now, they went off to Boyle in the semi-final, the final, but they were taking on senior games and becoming and being man of the match in them. But look at those two players. Like, the special players always stand out.
And they do, and they make the progression fairly quickly as well. I mean, you know, lads do just adapt to the level, because they've, guys like Clifford and O'Shea have probably been performing pretty well at club level in Kerry for the last, you know, at least for the last season. So they know what it's about. They're quality players. They've played in big games. Like, you can't forget that. Like, they've played in All-Ireland finals already. They have that big game experience. They've already had all of these pressure moments in these big games. So moving on to senior level, it's maybe not as big a step up for them as it is for players in other counties who maybe haven't had that experience.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough as well. Now, the winner of performance of the weekend has to be, I want to give Gary Walsh a shout out from Laois, who played really well, and we kind of, Laois need to maybe build a forward line around him and Donny Kingston, and Donny Kingston's on the way back, and John Sugrue picked a team that a lot of people might have been surprised about, that he's definitely moving towards a new crop of Laois players. There's no doubt about that. But the performance of the weekend has to go to Brian Fenton, lads. And the way I'm going to describe Brian Fenton's performance the other night is that he looked like he was a minor and the Kildare players were under 14s. Like, whenever he decided that he wanted to run through them, he could run through them. Whenever he wanted to catch, he could catch. Whenever he wanted to run through and goes, it was like a fella that was overage for an underage level, yeah, saying, lads, has anyone checked his birth cert here? Because this lad's too good to be playing against these lads.
He drove down, he had a big beard with him. And there's that hopeless clip of Luke Flynn. Like, Brian Fenton's like, he's first there for the break, but the ball doesn't break, and then he's away off, and Flynn's trying to get a hand on him.
Yeah.
And there's about speed 60 yards before, like, and Flynn follows him, but he can't get near him. And it's just, once he's gone, and you can't do anything about it. And so clinical off the left, right. But he started taking men on so easily, you know, and that's actually scaring me a little bit, thinking if he realizes he can do this whenever he wants, because I think Tomás O'Shea compared him to Jack O'Shea, but he's so light, he's so like evasive. He's just a different sort of type of midfielder.
When he compared him to Jack O'Shea? Do you ever see Jack O'Shea scoring a goal? He'd run around the long way and just run straight back into his position. That's what Fenton. I thought the way he just dealt with that brilliant goal, as in, this is nothing to me. And that's the way Jack O'Shea used to run back out. There'd be no celebration, it was just business. And maybe Tomás subconsciously just kind of saw maybe that, because that's what I saw when he did it live. It was like kind of, I don't know, just like a machine turning back into his position. But he's a phenomenal player, and you're right, I didn't realise he had that left kind of curler in his. Now, it was a bit of a looper. I'd like to see him doing it a couple more times before I start saying he's a good left hook, because sometimes he can catch them, and it's like the way it dropped didn't look like there was great control over it. But like, I mean, even the fact that he's going for it means that he's definitely practicing this, and it's something that's, you know, we will see more of. But he it's effortless for him.
Yeah, and the culture in with the Dublin squad is continued improvement from the players. So, you know, you do expect that Fenton will continue to improve over the next number of years. And if that's adding the ability to kick points off his left foot from distance, well, then that's just what he's going to do, because they're always looking to find that next level for themselves. And Fenton has an incredible record, really, in terms of his.
He's only lost one game.
Yeah, winning streak with Dublin is just unbelievable stuff. And he's been a key part of it. He's been a huge addition to them out there, just with his ability to cover ground, his ability to drive forward, and his, you know, just his general skill level and ability.
Yeah, quickly, were you surprised that he wasn't picking up Feely? Michael Darmacaulay looked like he was spoiling Feely, because I thought Feely obviously dominated Dublin in the Leinster final last year. And Fenton got a bit of criticism for that. We hadn't seen Fenton get dominated in the air like that, but they didn't pair off on each other last night.
It'd be more of a surprise to me that Kildare didn't have Feely on Fenton.
Well, that's fair enough. I would go so far as to say, though, and Keane O'Neill said after the game, how dependent Kildare's game is on Feely dominating. You know what I mean? Yeah. Dominating there. I think Feely, you could argue Feely's just as important to Kildare as Fenton is to Dublin.
So they both wanted to free up their main man?
Maybe, yeah, it could have been.
Dublin's just happened to run right.
Yeah. Michael Darmacaulay just kneed Feely into the head, and that was the end of Feely. I think, I don't know, I'd like to give Michael Darmacaulay the benefit of the doubt there. It was Feely was bending down, and his tie hit him in the head. It was a really nasty bang, and it took Feely completely out of the game. So I would say his teammates were delighted with Michael Dara. I'm not sure if Michael Dara definitely meant it, but whether he meant it or not, it happened, and Feely was gone. He came off late with a calf strain, and that was it. So Brian Fenton, anyways, I didn't try to ring him because there's very little point, even though I've an awful lot of time for Brian. I've met him outside, not in a non-professional capacity, which he won't entertain me, but he's a really nice level-headed fella, a real gent, and he's our first performance of the weekend winner of the year. Congratulations to him. Right, that's all we have time for. We will be back on Thursday with Stevie. Talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.